Hello, welcome to Ono, Ross, and Curry, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal, but take part ourselves.
Yep, when they make the claims, we show up so you do not have to. I'm Ross Blotcher.
And I'm Carrie Poppy.
Hello, Carrie Poppy.
Oh, hey, Ross.
Hey, I don't think we got to say enough about the Self-Realization Fellowship.
You can never say enough about being self-realized.
Let us say
more. You know who can really never say enough is Paramahansa Yogananda.
He says a lot.
He has so much to say even from beyond the grave.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of writing.
Hi, Paramahansa-ji.
And a lot of recorded video of him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you did not hear the first part of this investigation, well, then you're really going to be lost out now.
Yeah.
I'd recommend listening to part one.
Right, this is going to be part two of a two-part, stay with me, of a two-part series.
So we're talking about Paramahansa Yogananda, the founder.
Discoverer and founder. Of the Self-Realization Fellowship.
Yep. Which is, it's kind of headquartered here in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Even though it has its...
I don't think it's kind of. I think it is.
Even though it has its ties to India.
Sure.
That great land.
Yes, Mother India.
Yeah, he wrote many books.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting. I feel that as we read his material, there's a lot of repetition there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
One of the monks, I think, kind of said that himself. He kind of admitted in one of the talks, like, yeah, you feel like you read a lot of the same things over and over as you're going through the lessons and as you're reading the various books. But that's because repetition is so important for the truth. Some things just bear repeating.
That's, I mean, kind of fair, right?
Sure.
That is something we know about humans.
But especially when their literature is
the
corpus, yeah, of Paramahansa Yogananda, with occasional writings by Sri Dayamata and, you know, other luminaries within the group.
And there is some internal consistency there about, I mean, like meditation is, there's a lot of repetition just in the act of meditating.
Sure.
A lot of the techniques are to just like say a mantra over and over. So they obviously believe in the power of statements to yourself.
Would you say that they have the largest occult library?
No, I wouldn't. Hi, OTO. Oh, no, wait. That was the Aetherius Society.
Yeah, they've got the largest occult library.
I immediately pictured the OTO's little library.
Which I was impressed by.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Actually, I just yesterday started to read The Book of Lies by Aleister Crowley.
Oh, yeah?
Goodness, that's a bunch of nonsense.
That guy's so pompous.
I love that he made notes. It, like the edition that's out now that's the most popular has the original text on one side and then like his own notes about what he already wrote on the other side, the way
like
a folio of Shakespeare would be. But
oh,
it's
my
like,
goodness.
Oh, I think the author mentioned it's like, it was you.
Let me interpret this for you, what I just said.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was too obtuse the first time.
Right. And then the explanation, of course, does not help.
Love is the law.
Love under will.
Also, Paramahansa Yogananda seemed to have a lot of audio recordings and video recordings of him.
Yes.
And it's funny because we got to see various pieces of footage of him. And I think he was always incredibly conscious of the camera's presence.
Yeah, for sure. He'd always like point at the camera. If other people were around him, he'd be like, hey, look over there. There's the camera. And you'd see them all look at the camera. And then when it would just settle on him, he would just look off in the distance like a noble dog with his hair in the wind.
Right. Like, yeah, he'd want these heroic poses like, okay, right. I'm going to angle my chin up and to the, you know, northeast.
Yeah, I guess some people would think of like the shot of a soldier. I immediately see like a border collie.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And then he'd also be very serious, usually, in front of the camera. So, okay, now we will be reverential. And he'd look at the cameras if someone had just died, and maybe he'd like slowly point behind him so you could see this holy shrine.
Uh-huh. Or just like a blissful look of peace.
The enlightened look of peace.
So where we saw most of these videos, I'd say, was at the Self-Realization Fellowship Convocation.
Oh my goodness, they have a convocation?
Yes, Ross, and
Is it like a local convocation?
Well, it is for us. It's a worldwide convocation, but it happens to be every year in Los Angeles, where we live.
Perfect.
I know. And so we found out about this, and we were like, okay, we got to go to
that. Oh yeah, this is their big event.
And then we found out how much it cost.
Yeah.
$325
per person. Yep.
Per person. Per person.
And did you have to be, I think, taking the lessons to even sign up?
I think so.
Yeah.
I believe so. Which kind of makes sense.
Sure. They want to see that you're dedicated enough.
And I also don't know that it would have that much. I think you'd be pretty lost if you had no prior understanding and you went to that.
Yeah, it's true.
There's a lot of stuff that's kind of like
reviewed. Assumed that, yeah, you understand what a lot of these terms mean.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would have been really lost if I'd gone there first.
Yeah.
For sure.
Me too.
Yeah, so we forked over $650 of your donation money. Thank you. Keep it coming.
Thank you. Which is why it is wonderful for you to go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
It's a wonderful thing.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah, and so it was going to be held at the Westin Bonaventure Hotel, which is interesting because not too far away, Paramahansa Yogananda had passed away.
Willfully left the human body.
Mahasamadhi.
Yes, that's it.
Like a really fancy somatic trance where you actually leave your body.
Right.
And
forever.
He had done that at the Biltmore Hotel.
Right.
So like, why don't they hold it at the Biltmore?
And I was just there for the LA Press Club Awards.
Do you think the Biltmore would have held this group for the World Convocation?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. Do you?
I don't know, actually. I haven't been to the Biltmore.
I think they would, but it is a fair amount fancier, so it might just really up the ticket price.
Gotcha. Well, we don't need that.
Boy, we don't. $325 is a lot. Now, this is for 7 days of programming or eight?
I'm going to bring up my schedule. Yeah, 7 days of programming. So what do you get for your $325? Is it a good deal?
Oh, boy. Well, it depends on what you think is a good deal. For me, maybe not. I don't think I'll go next year, for example. The thing is that they believe that meditation is the most powerful thing that you can do as a human being, and it gets even more powerful when you are meditating with others. But they don't do like led group meditation. You just meditate by yourself in a room with others.
Right. And they have presentations where they talk about meditation techniques.
But not even right before the meditation. That's just sort of like disjointed.
Yeah, and you're just expected to do it on your own time.
Right. And there's like meditation going on at all times during the convocation in one of the rooms. So what I would consider the actual programming, the talks and mixers and stuff are pretty sparse because you're just enjoying this experience of being with your brothers and sisters in meditation. Mm-hmm. Now for you or me, who like we have some experience meditating, but it's not something we do several hours a day.
Right.
You just show up and you're like, okay, I did my half hour of meditation. What's happening today? Oh, one talk? Okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of people come maybe expecting this to be sort of a retreat. It's like a meditation retreat. But it's interesting that it's not even more guided than it is
for
that. There's also a series of pilgrimages where you can get in buses and go visit the various sites, the Mother Center that we mentioned in Mount Washington, the Lake Shrine Center, and even the one in Encinitas, I believe.
Yeah, the ashram in Encinitas.
Well, that had to be a long bus drive.
Yeah.
And so they encouraged us locals not even to bother with those.
Right.
Because all these people are coming from far away.
And it's an additional cost.
Yeah, yeah. It was like $70 added onto the ticket to go to Encinitas, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey.
And this was a big crowd of people.
Oh, yeah.
I was super surprised.
Way more than I expected.
Yeah, totally.
Now, I'm pretty bad at estimating once the numbers are that big, but how many people do you think were there?
Well, they said at one point that there were about 3,000 people.
Whoa, is that right?
Yeah, and I believe it.
Oh, my God.
Just looking at...
How many people went to your high school?
Less than 2,000.
See?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's true.
It's, wow.
It's impressive. Wow. Yeah, when we first arrived, it's at this, you know, high-rise hotel that's got four towers to it. We came in and there were already kind of these socialization events going on. Mm-hmm. So people were gathering around. I would have guessed at that time like, oh, maybe like 400 people.
Yeah.
But then once we all much later got into, it was like later that night, we got into this large room, probably the largest room at the hotel there. Then I realized like, oh, wow, it's a sea of people.
Right.
All very quiet, kind of somber people.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the general cast of the room. Yeah. Like you walk in and nobody's like giving you big smiles.
Right. Which is weird because in one of Paramahansa Yogananda's writings, he talks about how important it is to smile. And he's like, make yourself smile. Stand in front of a mirror and use your fingers to push the sides of your mouth up so that you smile. If that's what you have to do. And then like three paragraphs later, he's like, but don't fake it.
Yeah, it's just my natural like inclination. I'm passing by somebody like,
yeah, oh, I'm like, oh, hi. Smile. Especially since like, oh, we're all here at this thing together that's supposed to be exciting.
Yeah, hey, we're in the in group.
Yeah, and they're like, no, you're not.
And yeah, you were noticing like most of the docents, guides.
Volunteers, yeah.
Were usually pretty straight face.
Yeah.
So I started making, I was like, no, no, I can make them smile. Uh-huh. So I would like give
that's right.
a long and uncomfortable smile until I got one of them to smile back at me.
Right.
At which point it was kind of a nervous smile.
And then one time you were like, I'm going to make this guy smile, but he didn't see you as you were approaching him. Uh-huh. So you just started walking like toward him, but he was against a wall. So it wasn't even like you could pass it off like you were going somewhere else.
Oh, just, I was like, going out of my way. Yeah.
Yeah. You were just like beelining toward him with this like evil grin on your
plastered
face.
Grin.
Yeah. And then finally looked up and saw you. And then you like immediately like 90 degree turned and walked away. You were like, got my objective. Goodbye.
I'm glad I could brighten his day.
Yeah. I don't think you did, but you brightened mine.
Mission accomplished.
So, yeah, on that first day, the first day was Sunday.
Yeah, and we came in, we wanted to attend this kind of new recruit orientation. We thought, oh, well, that's perfect for us. Newcomers welcome.
That's us.
And that was in the same ballroom where they were doing the frequent meditation breaks.
Right.
That room held quite a few people. I'd say nearly 1,000 people could fit in there.
Yeah.
And it was 2/3 full.
Yeah. It-
Three
Maybe.
Quarters.
Oh, I would have thought a little less, but okay. Anyway.
And so there was a podium and lectern up there where people would speak from. Recurring theme was that they would have the picture of Paramahansa Yogananda up at the front of every right. room we went in.
Which is like a pretty common guru thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they used the same picture each time. And it was like one of the last photos taken of him. They said elsewhere, one of the pieces of literature, like the last photo of Paramahansa Yogananda smiling.
Ah, right.
Before he left his body. And it's this like sleepy smile, like he just woke up.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's about ready to go to sleep, which I guess would be apt.
I wonder, I mean, so that obviously means there are other photos of him, but he was frowning. I wonder what those look like. Like during that talk, I guess there were no photos of him smiling.
So oh, maybe gotcha.
He was frowning about his impending death.
His hair is kind of off center. And it's just interesting they chose that particular photo of him. But it was everywhere and colorized and had a big wreath of flowers in front of it. Mm-hmm. So it always felt like we were at a memorial for Paramahansa Yogananda.
But again, like that's a typical guru thing, like offering them flowers and fruit.
Back at the temple, they always had like a rose in front of every picture of him.
Yeah, an offering.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of flowers and fruit, I was under the impression that we weren't supposed to bring, well, maybe not weren't supposed to, but I thought it wasn't ideal for us to bring anything with flour in it because I was reading all his writings and he talked about how white flour is just so bad for you. It's so bad for you. And everyone eats too much flour.
Okay.
And, but you know, like flour's in a lot of shit.
Oh yeah.
And then he was talking about how you should subsist mostly on fruit if you have to eat. And so I brought all this fruit because I thought everyone there is just going to be eating fruit. And then the first day we got there, there was like a reception in the main hall with like cake. Just like white flour crap cake that you'd buy at Ralph's.
Okay, so he tells you to smile.
Uh-huh.
You don't smile. He tells you not to eat white flour. You make white flour cake.
Yeah, what?
He tells you to eat fruit. What? No fruit there.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about food.
Yeah.
Did they give us lots of food for our $325 per person?
If you consider that the air itself and life energy is actually food, then they gave us an endless supply.
In other words, no food provided.
No food! Not one single food except for, again, this crap cake you could maybe grab that one time.
Yeah, like at the very beginning.
Yeah. I don't mean a nice, I don't mean like a cake with icing on it. I mean like that, you know, you get those clamshell boxes and there's just like slices laid against each other like sweet cake, like a breakfast cake.
Were people really eating it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't want one.
Yeah. So the whole time, no food provided, no hot drinks.
No hot drinks? There was a lot
Menos
of water.
Menos puntos, as my Spanish teacher would say.
Very good.
Yeah, water. You could get water. Though they would get nervous about that. I remember I was walking into the meditation room once to take a break from the reading area.
Never know.
And one of the ushers followed me in, like kind of quickly, nervously. And was like, oh no, what am I doing? What am I doing? And she looked down at my cup. And she saw that it was empty. She's like, oh, you're okay.
Yeah.
I was just trying to preserve cups.
Yep, I carried around my cup too.
But that was it. There was no, like, it didn't even say, like, on the schedule, like, this is your lunchtime.
Or, right.
We will be meeting here for lunch.
Right.
Really, it just seemed like, oh, if you are somebody who needs food.
Right.
You can figure that out on your own time.
Well, they did mention during the...
And pay your own money.
The thing for the newcomers, they did mention that the restaurants around the hotel were ready for them. And they said, since most of the people are vegetarian there, they said, don't worry, there's vegetarian options at every restaurant.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for the ones right across the street that were closed.
What was that? It was one of those, like...
There's no reason those should have been closed.
Little nooks that serves only this one office building. So they're like, oh, we're going to call it a day at 2 p.m.
Like, directly what? Across the street. And it had, like, a lot of good restaurants, yeah. Some well-known ones.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to go to Asian Box.
Yeah.
It was closed.
Yeah.
All the time.
Ugh. What gives? So annoying. So annoying. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, no food, man.
Okay, well
then. And my boyfriend had bought so much fruit for me because I was like, oh, I'm going to have to just eat this fruit. And so he like went to the market and bought just like boxes and boxes of fruit that we're still now like trying to
yeah,
get through.
We didn't eat that much fruit during the actual. Well, you brought oranges on the first day.
And then and you brought oranges. Yeah. And bananas for both of us, yeah.
And my family had just given me a bunch of oranges, so I brought oranges the next day. My oranges were very difficult to open, though.
Yeah, yours were.
I got so messy. We were listening to this one lecture, and I'm sitting there trying to get this orange out, and it's like sticking to the rind, uh-huh. And I'm getting covered in juice, and it was disgusting, but there's nothing I could do. I couldn't wash my hands, so I'm like kind of trying to like lick at my fingers to clean them up.
Speaking of concentration, like... The whole like focus here is like to focus your concentration and like just focus on God. These people are talking at the front and you are just arguing with this orange, just like there was nothing else on earth. And you opened it up and you gave me this look that was like, you and I get it, this fucking orange, right? Mm-hmm.
I felt
cracked me up for some reason.
I needed to acknowledge, you know, that yes, I realize this is ridiculous what I'm doing with this orange. Okay, so no food provided. Well, then did they have...
Well, you did said it include sleeping at the hotel? No.
Well, you said there's lots of programming going on, right? Like just one thing after another?
No, let's see. Let's look at the... Oh. You brought the schedule here.
Oh, that's weird. There's only like four events... Throughout an entire day.
Yeah. So let's see. Like, let's pick a day at random. So I'm looking at Wednesday.
Okay.
So what happens on Wednesday? Assuming that you're an adult, here's what you could go to. You could go to a meditation in the morning.
Okay.
You wouldn't be able to go to the 2:30 class because that's for teens.
And that was like 8:30 to 9:30, right? The meditation.
8 to 11.
8 to 11. Okay. Wow. Long meditation.
Then at 4:30 to 5:30, you could go to the Satsanga, which is a questions and answers session.
Wait, we just skipped to 4:30?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Nothing happened in between then.
Nope. Then at 7:30, you can finally go to a talk, Strengthening Character by Developing Spiritual Courage and Endurance for an hour. And then at 9, back to meditation.
That is an SRF talk title, if ever I've heard one.
Yeah. So basically, assuming you're like us and you didn't get up at 7 a.m. to go to the 8 a.m. meditation, essentially you're going to come at 4:30 and stay till 8:30 for two programs with a two-hour break in the middle. And
yeah.
That's what you will have paid like $60 for that day.
Kind of ridiculous. So we went through with the pen and we kind of decided, okay, when can we take the time off or like get off of work or come on the weekend? So we're trying to find strategic times that we'd be there, and we'd kind of circle two adjacent things and realize, oh, there's like 3 hours between those two events. What are we going to do?
Meditate or eat.
And
there were some times where I'd go and you wouldn't, or you'd go and I wouldn't.
Yeah, we'd kind of trade places on certain things. At the beginning of like the major talks, I think that was like the real event every night,
right.
7:30 to 8:30. Every night they would have like a big talk from
kind of keynote.
One of the monks. Exactly. Yeah.
And it was always a monk and not a nun.
Correct.
Because there are monks and nuns, and the organization's led by a woman, but there were no talks given by women.
Yeah, they were there. We saw them. Mm-hmm. But at least during the talks, they were not amongst us.
Oh, and during the, yeah, there were none amongst us. During the kirtan, which is the chanting, the ceremonial chanting, the nuns were on full display.
And playing the harmoniums and other musical instruments.
Sitar, yeah.
Sweet.
Very pretty instruments. The Kirtan, actually, I went to and you did not go to.
That is correct. Yeah, I came in during the last few minutes and I saw like they would be playing videos in one room, in like an overflow room. So I kind of walked in the overflow room. So I got like the last 5-10 minutes of the Kirtan.
Oh my gosh. It was very long.
Yeah.
So they played 3 songs, but those 3 songs took about an hour.
Wow. Because
they just, you know.
And you said there was a long break to meditate.
And then there was like 25 minutes of meditation.
I know you've been meditating all day, like for the last like 5 hours, but let's take a break and meditate some more.
And then there was another, they were like, okay, just one last thing. And then they played 2 songs to Lord Krishna in honor of his birthday. And those were endless songs. So that was like another half hour or something.
So it was Christmas?
Yes, it was Christmas. And it was the only talk that I snuck my boyfriend into. So he was just like, what is this? Because he was just stuck in the middle of endless singing.
He was down
and
for
silence.
It.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a good sport. He was. Oh, totally. But I think that it was like a pretty rough way to be introduced. I'm like, no one's talking. They're all just singing and being silent.
Right. I think if you're dating Carrie, you just have to expect that your life is going to be filled with weird things like that.
Sure. Yeah.
I felt like this whole weekend, it reminded me of this game that my wife's sister used to play on her, where she would say, oh, let's play bus stop.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And my young, you know, at the time, my wife, she was, I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 or something. She'd say, oh, how do we play? She said, okay, well, what you do is you got to sit very still. Okay. Okay. And you don't say anything because you're waiting for the bus to arrive. And so Kara would sit there like just very dutifully, very quietly waiting for the bus to arrive. And finally, you know, eventually she would say like, and then immediately, oh, the bus is here. The bus is here. Let's get on the bus. Okay, we're all walking on the bus. And we sit down. Okay, now what do we do? You got to stay very quiet on the bus. And then she would sit there until Kara got antsy again, and then she'd come up with some other little way to delay this. It felt like that's what this convocation was. Now be very quiet, meditate.
Also sort of like your wife's sister. There were a lot of stories of Paramahansa Yogananda being what I would call, now I'm not a psychologist, but I would call a
jerk.
Same idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. The stories would just be about him being like incredibly patronizing to the devotees.
Oh, this one in particular. Yeah, all of the main speakers for these kind of keynote type events where, you know, you see them on the giant screen and everything, they were all older white men. Mm-hmm. And one of them was telling the story of Paramahansa Yogananda, and it was told by Sri Dayamata, who was his eventual successor. And she was young at the time, like an initiate. She started when she was like 17.
Yeah.
And he was making, like with newspaper or something, he was making a dunce cap.
Right.
And
in front of everybody, like everyone was gathered in this room. So there's like 40 of them or something.
So the guru is doing like this origami to make a dunce cap.
Right. Everybody watch.
And so he calls her forward and she, good for her, she said no.
Yeah. Because it was like very clear that he was going to put it on her head.
Right. He kept repeating, oh, come on.
Come on, come on. And apparently she was always the one who was kind of like, oh, no one look at me. So she was like,
you might say she was kind of an introvert.
An introvert, yes. You could.
And yeah, she refused. And so finally kind of moved on. And then
and you and I, having heard so many stories like this, we're assuming, okay, this ends with him asking her to put the nun's cap on him or him putting it on himself.
Right.
And, oh, that's how he has lowered himself.
That's what you were all expecting, right? Like the story goes on that he dismisses everybody else and she's relieved and she starts to get up.
Well, first he tells her to stand in the goddamn corner and face the corner.
Well, he did that after he dismissed everybody.
Okay.
So she's getting ready to leave and he says, no, not you. You're going to stay.
Stay. Stay.
And so, yeah, this is where you're expecting him to say, you know, actually, I was going to have you put the dunce cap on me.
Mm-hmm. Or, and now that we are in the room together, you can put this on me. Or, you know, like some.
Instead of the story that we would expect, he not only tells her he was going to put the dunce cap on her, but he says, like, is that the right thing to do in front of everybody else to resist me and talk back to me?
And then makes her stand in a goddamn corner.
He makes her stand in the corner.
And face the corner.
Face the corner and then stand on one leg.
Uh-huh.
In the corner.
This is the kind of thing where if it weren't like and an Indian sage, we would be like, this crazy cult leader made this child like stand in a corner for hours and just like berated her. Well, maybe not hours, but for 25 minutes and berated her and told her how he was going to put a dunce cap on her. We would be like, that's Sue worthy material.
And then she comes back later and says, okay, I'll, you know, next time I will come up when you say so. And he said, well, I think you've learned your lesson.
Yeah.
Jerk.
Yeah. Seemed like a real dick. Now I say that.
This is like the only things we could say that could upset SRF members.
No, it's true. I was just going to say, and even so, I still like these people.
Oh, absolutely.
And I still like his writings and I still kind of like him. But he did seem like he was just real full of himself.
There were just those moments where like, yeah, he played the alpha dog.
Yeah. And like whenever the story would include someone saying nearly anything to the guru, his response would be something like, yeah, I know that. I'm the guru.
Yeah. Oh, man. There was a lot of that. Oh, also a lot. It was funny because we heard these stories, I think, before we knew the underlying explanation. A lot of stories where someone would be saying something within their head, and then he would just respond to their inner thoughts.
Yes. And there is, that is part of his writings, is that you develop like clairvoyance and clairaudience from
so they all love telling stories meditation. Like that. Like one of the monks was saying, oh yeah, I, you know, for a while I had changed my mantra from I love you Jesus, I love you Jesus, to I love you guru, I love you guru. And I was saying that in my head, and he turned around this one day and he said, I love you too.
Lovely. There was one talk that you weren't there for where one of the monks said that As the guru was going through the energization techniques, which I wish we could tell you about, but we can't tell you what they are because they're in the lessons, but mm-hmm. It's a way of preparing for your meditation. As he was doing those, the guru was going too fast. And one of the monks at the time was just thinking like, oh, he's going too fast, but didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it was done, the guru was like, you thought it was going too fast, but that's because your concentration isn't as good as mine. And they were all like really impressed. And I was like, you know, it's kind of obvious. You could infer that. If you could see someone being like, oh, this is going too fast. You know, like you could see that on someone's face.
Yeah, body language. I think so. Because they wouldn't say it.
Right.
Not here.
Right.
Not at the SRF.
No.
Very quiet.
Right.
Very introspective.
Yes.
Yeah, another one that I missed that you caught had the speaker from our local temple.
Yeah.
And I was kind of bummed I missed that because I like that guy.
And when they announced him, there was this like, in the audience, he seems very revered.
Big deal. You know, I like him not only because he's a nice guy, and he told me that I have a great voice.
Oh.
He's like, you have a great voice.
I have a podcast.
He said, are you on the radio?
Oh, really?
And he has a great voice too. And I said, well, I know, but thank you. Uh-huh. I don't know if I thought I should have said like, oh, but I do podcasting. Uh-huh. Anyways, he looks like Peter Cushing from Star Wars, the first Star Wars.
No idea, but okay.
Oh, this will help you. He plays Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh, Grand Moff Tarkin. Of course.
On the Death Star, he's the one that tells Leia that, you know, we're going to blow up your planet.
Uh-huh. Yes. Alan Arkin's grandfather. Got it.
So, I showed you the photo and you're like, oh, it does look like that guy. So, guys, look up Peter Cushing. This guy looked like that, but wearing like a salmon-colored robe. I guess, would you say saffron? But I think like saffron seems to like cover a lot of different colors.
Yeah, I don't know,
goes
man.
From like a I'd mustardy like kind of yellow. A coral? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the
a rosy orange.
Yeah, on the orange end of coral.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I like that guy.
You might call it Cajun shrimp if it were a nail polish.
I might.
Listen, everybody. I use Groupon a lot. And
you do.
I really do. And I got a Groupon to have my nails done. And
way to keep the dream alive.
I know, right? I just loved this one color and I said, what color is that? And they said it's called Cajun shrimp.
What?
Yeah.
Cajun shrimp.
So now I just remember when I go there, I like the Cajun shrimp color.
Please. All right.
Let that be a lesson to you.
what am I supposed to take from that lesson?
The lesson is,
can you talk about this lesson?
For with you are under
oh, no.
The legacy of a true angst child. You will not be born to the star of the third atmosphere unless you bring truth and light to the underscore of distance.
That makes sense.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also, service is the jewel in the rock of attainment.
Oh.
That's an Aetherius Society reference.
Oh, that. Yeah. If you haven't heard the Aetherius Society episode. Speaking of which,
yeah.
I felt so much that Paul from the Aetherius Society would have done so well within this organization.
Yes.
Even though he's a little more extroverted, I think they would have loved him.
Yeah, I think his a lot of his thoughts are in line with them too.
And I found myself wishing that instead of George King, he had gravitated towards Paramahansa Yogananda. Because, then he'd be speaking to, you know, many thousands of people who'd be delighted to hear him talk.
Bet he's doing well as a big fish in a small pond. Maybe that's what he likes.
There you go.
Bigger pond.
Bigger pond.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of thinking about that because they were talking about like their vows of celibacy, like when you take the monk position, you're renouncing the worldly pleasures. And I was thinking within Catholicism, if you're a priest and you kind of abdicate from those vows, that's a big deal. Like kind of the world goes, oh my goodness.
Yeah, yeah.
But really for this community, it's just, you know, the 3,000 plus people who really care. It was weird to think about that, how like they had a lot of these kind of little ethical rules, but it was really held by the smaller community. It felt strange to me to kind of contemplate that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Something and to meditate upon.
Even with the priests, like I was never Catholic and still I found myself sort of caring, you know?
Yeah, if they hooked up with somebody, wait a second.
Like, hey.
But I think if one of these guys did that, I don't know, it would feel different to me. It's just strange.
I know a woman who was becoming a nun, and at her third interview, where like a priest has to sign off on you, at her third interview, she fell in love with a priest and they have a little boy.
Whoa.
They're married.
Nice.
Yep.
Good story.
Yeah.
So they saw each other and they sang, oh, sweet mystery of life, at last I found thee.
Yes.
But no, at last I know the secret of it all. I've had that stuck in my head now.
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is to a service by the Self-Realization Fellowship where
every single service of the SRF.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would finish it with the musical version of that song. I just assume that it's like this cultural touchstone that everybody knows. But not so much. It came from a Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy musical called Naughty Marietta from like 1935, I think.
And then was made more famous in Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yeah, and then it came later in Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Which is a fucking crazy movie.
I was so excited for Carrie to see this.
Oh my God. If you guys have not seen Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Julie Andrews, Mary Tyler Moore.
It is fucking nuts. It is so crazy. Like,
there's no good way to sum up the film.
Well, my favorite way to sum it up is that it is a musical about sex slavery.
I mean, that's an important part of it, but
it's the funnest way to describe
it. Sure. If the sex slavery wasn't in there, that wouldn't have changed the core story.
I don't know, man.
Which is about Millie
being modern.
Yeah. And she's not involved in the sex slavery.
No, but.
But she's oblivious to it because she's so naive.
It's pretty central, though.
See the movie if you haven't.
Anyway, okay, it's fucking crazy. And I was watching it by myself, and just my mouth was agape the entire time. And I kept talking to the screen, what? What?
There's so many quotables in that film.
And I kept turning it off because I just felt like saturated. Just like, I can't, oh, if I watch anymore, just I can't even process it.
It is frenetic. If you had to have one word for it, I'd say frenetic.
Okay.
I had heard the song there because when Mr. Trevor Graydon sees Mary Tyler Moore's character, immediately, like, they both break out in the, oh, sweet mystery. And of course, I'd heard that in these silly Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy musicals. I think I'm the only person my age who's actually seen them, but my mom was obsessed with those films. They were America's Sweethearts in the late 30s.
Okay.
So I know like all those songs. I love to think that Paramahansa Yogananda was a fan.
Oh, I hope so. But anyway, so he would take them and then just change the words a little.
Yeah.
To make it his own. And everyone's so impressed by this. He's like, such a great poet. He's not that good a poet, you guys.
You know, we'll admit he's a good writer.
He is.
So-so poet.
Yeah. And he just takes, like, all of his songs are pre-existing standards.
Right. And so, when we would go to the services, they would play songs like the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Right.
But they would change the words. And so, his love is marching on. All right.
Right.
Very good. So, yeah, you can get the book with all his kind of custom lyrics to many songs, popular tunes.
Many of your favorite tunes. Yeah, it's like one of those commercials where they're like, do you remember this song? That's on here too. But in this case, you know, just the words will be very slightly changed.
Totally. Well, while we're speaking of the temple, I haven't talked about my friend, Matt, yet.
Uh-huh.
One Sunday, I think I'd lingered longer than you at a service, or maybe I'd gone to one that you hadn't. But for whatever reason, I was just kind of wandering around by myself. Oh, yeah, that's right. I had my copy of Autobiography of a Yogi. Mm-hmm. And I went out. There's a little meditation garden and a nice little structure to sit under and read for a while. It was very beautiful. And so finally, I kind of walked out to my car and someone kind of taps at my window.
Yeah.
I open up the window and there's a guy there kind of leaning in. And he's got a big bushy beard. And he says, oh, I just saw you wandering around and I saw you were new. Just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Matt. And so we were talking a little bit and I felt kind of weird just sitting in my car. So I got up. I showed him the book and he's like, oh, well, you want like a tour of the place? I can show you around. Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
He said he's been there for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. So he was leading me through and using keys like to open up the buildings and showing me the Sunday school in there. And I just started the autobiography at that point. So mm-hmm. I still didn't know who a lot of the figures were. So he was explaining to me kind of the succession. And he was the first person who I'd learned from that Babaji is still alive.
Right.
What? Uh-huh. And anyway, so yeah, really sweet. And other people would come and try to like close things down. He'd be like, oh, I'm just showing my friend around. Oh. So he introduced me to Grand Moff Tarkin. And then they were both so excited, like, oh, wow, that's like vintage AY.
Right.
Referred to my book as. Then I was getting ready to leave. He's like, oh, well, let me show you where the meditation garden is. And so there was a separate garden meant solely for the monks to use. Oh. He said, but that's fine. You can come in here anytime and use it just to sit and think or even read if you want. And I was like, oh, I'm all excited. And so he said, on the gate, just push G1893. I'm pretty sure that was it. But it was like a reference to the year Yogananda was born. I think uh-huh. the G was for guru. And the reason I say that, because normally I wouldn't share the password, is because it didn't work.
Oh.
And he had just gotten in there. And then I tried to go right back. And so like, okay, something's missing there. Hmm. And I tried like a lot of different combos of that and like the other days of his birth. Yeah, so something was missing somehow. I wasn't able to get back in there. But for a brief shining moment, I was there in Camelot.
And you were a monk. You were amongst
I was amongst
those in Camelot.
Yeah, they're very good at creating beautiful spaces where I would like to spend time reading.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And boy, you got to go to Lake Shrine.
So oh, pretty. I'm so looking forward
it's
to
a little
it. I'm bringing a book. I want to just sit there for like 5 hours and
you
read.
You know, here's the thing. I am not sure that's welcome. Not that I think they kick you out or anything.
They want you to be meditating.
I think so. Like it, because it screams for bring a book here.
I know.
But no, since literally no one had one, I was like, I think I'm only supposed to meditate here.
Okay. Well, I think I could get away with that at the Mother Center because I definitely got the vibe there. Like, yeah, this would be a good reading spot.
I would secluded. Think if your book were like one of his books, you could probably get away with it.
Yeah, I would enjoy that.
Do that.
Will do.
So, Ross.
Hello, I'm Ross.
On that same day that we stuck my boyfriend into one talk, and listen, mm-hmm. we're not going around stealing shit. It's just that we had one extra tag, and so my boyfriend came to one measly little chant session.
Mm-hmm.
But he also joined us for this little...
You just wanted to give him a chance.
Yes, exactly. So then we, all three of us, went to see this little video that was playing of a satsanga.
Yeah.
So a satsanga is a question and answer period with a monk or nun.
The root word means like time with a guru.
Uh-huh. This one was a filmed satsanga with Sri Diamata before she passed away.
It looked like it was sometime in the late 80s, early 90s perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe. Gotta say, they had good videographers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They must have been recruiting professionals from the industry or something. But whenever they'd show video, it was generally like really high quality.
Well
shot. Okay, however.
Other than this one, which we'll get to in a second, when they would film things, they would put it in slow-mo and stretch like 10 minutes of footage into 35 minutes of footage.
Oh, yeah,
and
we got to talk about that
Christ,
one.
Christ, well, it was so long.
Well, that's talking about, yeah, the earlier video from like the 30s.
Another one.
Oh, really?
The Lake Shrine video is pretty slow.
Oh, you're right. But they didn't do the reversal thing.
Right.
But yeah, the first time we saw a video, they had a separate room dedicated to video watchings. We went in and there was Yogananda's visit to India, which was super cool for me because I'd read the book account of it. It's like, oh, wow, they were videotaping all this. So there'd be like the somber views of him and the heroic views. And occasionally like the, oh, we're laughing now in front of the camera. But it was all in black and white and they'd kind of added the sepia tone.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were saying, they would constantly slow down the footage
It would be footage of nothing. It would be like him just sitting there or him pointing at the camera. And then they'd just like have arrows that were like, here's his cousin. And here's his friend, Joe.
Yeah. And they really drew it out like to an hour long. Uh-huh. And then they would get to the end of that footage and then they'd just slowly backtrack.
Uh-huh.
Like, let's play it again, but in reverse.
Right.
And it was like more of a square format, of course, when, you know, before the days of widescreen. And so they would fill in the sides with kind of a blurred version of the edges of, of the frame. And it put me to sleep. I was like,
that's right. You fell asleep and started very lightly snoring. And so I had to wake you up.
Thank you for waking me up.
Yeah, no problem.
It was embarrassing.
I waited for you to actually make a tone. It was like just heavy breathing that I was pretty sure no one could hear. And then finally when I heard like, I was like, no, no, I will not let this happen to you. And I woke you up.
I appreciate it.
No problem. You were very embarrassed.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Anyway, so then the second movie that we saw was Asatanga with Sri Diamata.
Right.
A rest in peace. So they
Seemed like a very sweet lady, reminded me of my grandma.
And a very pretty lady, I'd say.
And they called her Ma.
Yes. And so it's a question and answer session, and it truly is a question and an answer.
Yep.
So first she sits and she sort of ruminates on her various thoughts for 10 minutes.
And then she's saying, and I realize like you're all here from all over the world, and this is your one chance to sit with me. I know I haven't gotten to see.
Because this was a convocation.
Right. I know I haven't gotten to see any of you. So this is your chance to talk to me and for us to interact and to ask me questions.
And then no one like jumps to the microphone. Phone immediately, so she like just sort of goes on talking some more of her thoughts, and now like another half hour passes and now it's like too weird to jump up and ask her a question,
right? And so yeah, this is like an hour long video,
right? And we're like 45 minutes in and we're like,
there's not so much question and answer here.
And then finally she's like, so does anyone have a question?
And so one person, we can't even hear them. They like try to boost the audio a little bit, but it's something to the effect of, I've been telling my mother about this and she's having a really hard time focusing during her meditation.
Yeah, great question.
Uh-huh.
And then Sri Diamata's like, ah, yes. Well, you know, people say that they're trying really hard, but they aren't really. And then just completely blames the mom.
And yeah, it takes about 10 minutes before she finally kind of concludes. So really, she just needs to try again.
Yeah.
And try harder.
Practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
Keep
at it.
And then she's like, okay, well, that was great.
I'm so
See
glad.
You in a year.
So glad I got to talk to you all.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it.
One question.
Yep.
Many answers.
Yep. Good times. Also, this was in an exceedingly freezing room. God.
That screening room, they really pumped in the cold.
It was like...
It was piping cold.
It was one of those, like, almost see your breath situations.
Oh, was it that cold?
For me, it was. I don't know if it physically was. And also, the meditation room that was open all the time, that was freezing cold.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if that's
Does that help with meditation?
Yeah, maybe.
Usually they say
so.
You want your body not to be drawing attention to itself one way or the other.
Right, so you'd think it would just be like tepid.
Yeah, they'd go for like 71 degrees on the dot.
Yeah,
weird. Yeah, there was one other video that we saw, and it was the Lake Shrine dedication.
Yes, also slow.
Yeah, and that was shot relatively near the end of Paramahansa Yogananda's life. And again, the footage was just beautiful because it was all in full color, and it looked like one of those Disney nature documentaries from around the same time. And so there'd be like the shots of these beautifully pink flowers and then swans swimming around and then like maybe 10 minutes of just Yogananda's face as he looks blissfully and intelligently just beyond the camera.
Yeah.
Inevitably, he looks then toward the camera and ponders it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of awkward.
Yeah. And it just feels like he's like, yes, you may be in awe of me. It's me. I'm here. I don't need to be in awe of you.
Yeah.
I'm cool. I got you down. Maybe this means he is not my guru at this time. But I don't feel like I need to just gaze at him.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe one day he will be. I like him.
Which is the teaching. If you are inducted into Kriya Yoga, he is your guru.
Right.
And the feeling is that he is still ever present. Much like Jesus. Still around. Can still talk to you. Communicate with you.
Yeah, yeah. People would talk about like having a relationship with him.
Right.
And having conversations with him.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of the talks were kind of focused on finding ways to feel more connected with him now than even one could be in the flesh.
Right. It's kind of interesting, though. Like, there's that whole line of gurus, but but they all lead back to God. It seems like then just why wouldn't you just talk to God?
Yeah, and that seems like that's the eventual goal in this. But the guru is kind of this intercessor who makes it easier.
Right. Yeah, you. I guess like the way people talk to Jesus. Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, speaking of Lake Shrine, when I was telling one of my coworkers about the SRF, I kind of wanted to get his response because he's from India and he's led meditation classes at work. But also he's just a very, you know, critical thinker, intelligent guy. So I said, oh, what do you think of the SRF? And I was like heavy in the middle of Autobiography of a Yogi, or AY, as we insiders call it. And, you know, reading all these miraculous claims. I said, oh, what do you think of the SRF? Are you familiar with Paramahansa Yogananda? He's like, oh, yeah, he's great. I love the SRF. You've got to go to their Lake Shrine temple. Mm-hmm. It's just beautiful there. I said, oh, okay, well, what about like all the, you know, extraordinary claims, the miracles? And he just kind of, oh, psh, that's, you know, that's not even a big part of it. It's just about, you know, making everyone feel welcome and meditating.
Yeah, you know, even though that's in the text, I don't remember ever at any of our services someone bringing up miracles to you.
No, that's why I was so surprised to read the book, just because, yeah, it was so pervasive.
Yeah.
And it was just one after another of these, like, you know, kind of crazy stories. Like, he had this pocket watch that appeared out of nowhere, and, like, this wise person had predicted this would happen, and it will only stay as long as needed. And it, like, appeared within his mother's hands while she was meditating, and she gave it to him. And then many years later, then it disappeared just at the moment when he no longer needed it.
That's such a sweet little mom trick, you know? Like, oh, he said this to my son, and I'm gonna...
Right. And is that a coin behind your ear? Right. Wow.
But it's, like, kind of sweeter than that to me. You know, it's like the Santa Claus myth or something, you know? It's like, I'm gonna make this magic moment for you.
And then at some point, he lost it, and it became this kind of beautiful end to the story, because it was supposed to disappear.
You know, do you have a lost item that you still think about?
My swim trunks. I'm wondering where the hell they are.
Not the kind of thing I meant.
Okay.
When I was 10, I had this cameo ring that, like, for some reason I just believed was magical, and I would rub it and make wishes.
Oh.
I just got it at an antique store, and I would wear it all the time and make wishes on it. And then finally I lost it, and I still think about that ring and miss it.
I have a number of items that have gone missing, and I'm, like, still kind of thinking they must be hiding somewhere in my apartment, but no, maybe not to that significance.
Oh, but Ross.
Yes.
Do you ever listen to those Maximum Fun shows?
Oh, yeah. They produce, like, the best quality entertainment this side of the Mississippi.
Wow.
And sometimes on the other side.
Okay.
Like Sawbones.
Like Sawbones. And in fact, we are going to be Sydney and Justin.
You and me?
Yes.
Carrie and Ross?
Yes. Somehow I'm going to explain very complicated medical topics to you.
Oh, I see. Because you're the woman, you get to be Sydney.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. But somehow we are going to trudge through
medical
history.
We're going to take you on a misguided Marshall tour of medicine.
Right. Yeah. So we did this swaparoo thing where they're going to be Ross and Carrie and investigate something.
All the Max Fun shows are doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look out for this. We will be hosting an episode of Sawbones.
And they'll be hosting an episode of Oh No, Ross and Carrie, also known as Sydney and Justin.
Oh No, Justin and Sydney.
Yep.
So look for it.
Look for it.
Or listen for it.
Anyway, Ross.
Hello, Carrie.
As you look back over this investigation,
looking back,
what would you give it on a pseudoscience rating, where one is something not at all pseudoscientific, so something very scientific?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Like the theory of evolution.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then number 10 is like something very pseudoscientific.
Hmm.
So something that's not at all based in science, right?
Oh, they're like the opposite of a well-established theory. Okay, so like just make something up then.
Like your whole body is super sticky, and
that's gross.
And it has ejaculated out of a mammal. Let's say it's goat sperm. Let's say your whole body is goat sperm.
That's equal parts disgusting and pseudoscientific.
Mm-hmm. That's a 10.
Okay, I don't want to give it that high.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't hear about the miracles, kind of like my friend Rajesh was saying, like, it's just, you know, about all religions are all kind of compatible and they seem to do kind of a reasonable job of finding a way to make all of them fit together. For the most part, it's kind of non-overlapping, if you will. I hate that phrase. Why am I even referencing that? But there are plenty of claims about what the brain can do and like monitoring other people's minds and dying with, you know, at will. So, you know what? All right. I'm talking myself into a higher rating. I'm going to say 7.5.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking like 6. I was mostly thinking about the claims that you can like not eat.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you're right. There's a fair amount of kind of pseudoscience going on. Yeah,
but you know, it's not like central to it the way you're handling like that's its whole deal,
right?
So I'm with you that it's not like super high.
Yeah, like the real focus is on the meditation,
right? And there's definitely science to support that meditation is good for you.
Absolutely.
But not necessarily that it is the best thing for the world.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm all down with the meditation. It's something I feel like I should do more.
Uh-huh.
And I think it might be part of just my personality that I'm not really drawn to spending my time that way.
Uh-huh.
But I feel that this crowd, for the most part, are sensible, intelligent people.
Yeah.
It's a very diverse crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I would say it's mostly white and Indian. I don't think right. I've seen any people of African descent.
There were a few.
Okay.
Definitely it was a minority. Yeah, mostly white, fair representation of Indian people. Mostly old, but there were, at the convocation, there were a lot of younger people.
Yep, for sure. And there was a whole room for kids.
The chillin'.
So we wouldn't have seen them that much.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, like even people were kind of contemporary to us.
Yeah. I met one guy who was 29.
So Carrie, Poppy.
Yes.
What would you give the SRF on a pocket drainer scale? Where one is something not very pocket draining.
10.
You'd give it a 10?
No. Go on.
You go to the metro. Someone is yelling loudly over a microphone. You go listen to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. They kind of yell at you for 20 minutes, but it doesn't cost you anything. Except
okay.
for 20 minutes.
Seems mostly irrelevant, but uh-huh.
But whereas a 10, you know, you want to go to hear the person yell down by the metro, but they won't yell anymore until you pay them $20. And then they just yell for like 2 minutes, and then they're like, I need more money or I'm not going to yell at you.
Mm.
And that's a 10.
And then you're compelled to do it.
Yeah, you're just a glutton for punishment, so you keep forking over money until you've got no more.
Cool. Okay, I'm going to say an 8. One, because this convocation is so freaking expensive.
Yeah.
But two, because they're pretty big on asceticism and how money is evil. And so there's a pretty big push to just give your money to them.
Yeah, they would pass the collection basket every time we'd go to a service and we'd put in a few bucks.
And they're into tithing for sure.
And then the lessons themselves weren't that expensive.
Yes, the lessons are cheap.
There's a lot.
Downright cheap.
There's a lot of literature and just little trinkets, little odds and ends that you're kind of expected to accessorize with. And I'm sure that all kind of adds up over time. So most of that isn't too expensive. But yeah, certainly the convocation itself and I think emphasis on giving more to the church definitely could add up. I'll go lower than you. I'll say 5.
Oh, okay. What would you give this on a creepiness rating, Ross, where 1 is something not at all creepy?
Mm-hmm.
You go into a library.
Mm-hmm.
You use the Dewey Decimal System to look up a book. So it's an old-timey library.
People don't do that anymore. That's not creepy.
And, right, you look it up, you check it out, you take it home, and you have a lovely adventure in your own mind.
Okay.
And then a 10 is something incredibly creepy. Like, you walk into the library, it is daytime, it is normal hours. You walk in and it is just silent in there. But like there are books lying open and there are pencils out and it's as if people have just been there, but no one's there. And you're walking around, hello, hello, it's me, Ross. Hello, hello. Do you say it's me, Ross, when you're walking around?
Yeah, that's how I talk.
Hello. And you're calling and there's
anybody?
Just like a faint echo and you're like, huh, okay, well, I'll just go get the book I want to do. And as you walk toward the aisle that has the book you want, a bat flies at your face. That's a 10.
Yeah, and unexpected. You know what? They definitely register the SRF.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because just there's all this imagery going on behind the scenes of, you know, your glowing third eye. But just picturing all these things of this kind of underlying reality and all this magical stuff going on. But it is pleasant. I don't know if I'd call it creepy, but it has that kind of imagery. I'll say 4.
Oh, wow. Okay.
What are you going to give it?
0. I don't feel creeped out at all.
No creep. So 1.
I want to give it a 0.
All right, fine. 0.
I feel like it is lower than checking out a library book.
All right, not creepy at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, spending time with the people, not creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't really smile that much. They're kind of serious. They don't really socialize that much. That's a little creepy. I'm sticking with my four.
Yeah, maybe I'll go to one.
Hey.
I'm on the scale at least.
Nice. What then, Carrie, would you give this on a danger rating where one is something not very dangerous, like getting in your car and then getting back out of your car? And then 10 is something like getting in your car, but then driving. And really, driving is the most dangerous thing we do in our lives.
Yeah, you're right.
So I'm calling that a 10.
Okay. That's fair. Maybe driving and fucking texting.
There you go. Yes. You're driving in LA. You're texting on your phone while listening to music.
Oh, my God. It infuriates me when I see people driving and texting. What are you doing? What are you doing, America? Like, I mean, it's like drunk driving. Like, you are out there willing to kill me, personally me, because I'm the one who's near you seeing you do this.
Because someone needs to know that you had good spaghetti last night.
Right. Or even if it's important, even if you're like, I'll be there in 20 minutes. Pull over. Pull over!
Okay, you're texting and you haven't fully removed the sunshade, like, from your windshield. Mm. You know, it's like the one that's got the Millennium Falcon and Chewie and Han Solo. And it's like obstructing half the vision from your car. Christ. All right, that's a 10. Why? That's a 10.
Okay, that's a 10. I'm going to give it a 3.5. Yeah. I almost want to go for, okay, so like the not eating stuff is ludicrous.
Okay.
And the stuff in there about how you should ask God before you go to the doctor worries me.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely registers. But I do think that at least the eating stuff is couched in terms of, oh, but if you still need to eat, that just means you haven't achieved that level yet. And everyone seems kind of okay with accepting when they haven't achieved, like, guru status.
Right.
So at least, like, there's an environment there that kind of excuses it away.
Yeah, show me someone who doesn't eat, and I'll show you someone who is a sneaky eater. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's another way to say it. Yeah, I wonder if any of them actually does that or tries to attain that. But I was curious, like, where are all these people eating and are they eating enough? But, I mean, no one looked unhealthily skinny or anything.
They're all trim, though. I don't remember seeing any, like, overweight people.
Oh, that's a fair point. Yeah. I don't really think about that.
Maybe that's good.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Good to be right there in the middle.
A fair amount of fasting worked into your regimen can be an okay thing. Yeah. I feel like they're fairly sensible people just in their day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
And all the talks had pretty practical advice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sensing that much danger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't worry for anybody who's part of the SRF.
Me neither.
So yeah, I'll say like one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Do you have a favorite moment, Carrie, that you'd like to share with the class?
Okay, so the things I think of are, one, you fighting with the orange. two, is just like the various times when we were trying very hard not to laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, happens at everything.
There'll sure.
be one moment where we just like can't keep it together.
Some very potent moments where we'd both like heard them say something. We knew it was a trigger for us to laugh. Uh-huh. Like, okay, do not look at each other.
Yeah, or we'd just cock our heads just like 10 degrees toward each other.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. You acknowledge? Yep, I acknowledge. Yep.
But the one that comes to mind is the Satsanga where we both realized like there was one question and one answer and we both just like kind of chuckled at the same moment and then we're trying not to laugh.
Right.
And then doing that like laugh cough. Yeah.
There was some laugh coughing to be had. That's a good favorite moment. I will say my favorite moment was Matt coming out and befriending me and showing me around. He's just a really sweet guy. Really enjoyed talking to him.
Well, good. Hi, Matt, if you hear this.
Yeah. I was hoping to see him at the convocation. I did not, though we did see our old friend, you may remember.
Ah, yes.
From the homeopathy episode.
Ayurveda.
Yeah, our Ayurvedic practitioner who prescribed us homeopathy and Ayurvedic medicine. He was there. And I often see him at work, too, because he gives massages there. And I did not go up to talk to him.
Sure.
Well, that's it for our show. Our producer and co-editor is Ian Kramer.
Our theme music is by Brian Keith Dalton.
You can find us on the internet at MaximumFun.org. There's a list of shows, and then you'll see, oh, no.
You'll figure it out.
Oh, no, Ross and Carrie.
Yeah, you guys are advanced modern people. And you can also see our photos at Facebook.com/OnRack.
Why picture it all in your head when you could see the pictures?
Yeah, right?
Head on over to iTunes and give us a positive review.
If you would, please. And if you want to leave a negative review, leave it for Joel Osteen. Because sometimes he beats us out in the spirituality category.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that Jolo stage.
We ruled the spirituality other list.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we rank somewhere on the religion list in general.
But anyway, you should remember.
So are those that are sick with anger, lust, desire. Those that are sex fiends, they should be put away somewhere. They should be allowed a chance to get well. So, if you have these terrible tendencies, remember, it was your own making from the past. You have to undo them, undo those evil habits. Otherwise, you are not fit to go to heaven.
Dave and Graham, and we host Stop Podcasting Yourself.
We started this podcast back in 2008, before podcasts had to have any kind of concept, so we don't really know how to describe it.
It's kind of like going to the barber shop if your barber knew all about the first season of the show Elf.
It's like a 90-minute massage where the masseuse is two people talking to each other with a third person.
It's like the Monsters of Metal tour, only quieter, no music, and just talking.
It's like a makeout session, but without the lips touching, they just talk a lot.
Download Stop Podcasting Yourself from iTunes or MaximumFun.org.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.